structure, discipline, accountability.
Mistreatment, misrepresentation.
Knowledge is power, y'all.
There has to be accountability.
This pandemic of toxic work culture and mistreatment has got to stop.
The podcast for federal employees by federal employees.
What's up? What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Fed Up. I'm your host, Ron Speakman. And today, my guest on the show is an RCA, a rural carrier assistant from the state of Tennessee, who was called into the office to run a city pickup route after being pulled off his own route, mind you, despite management knowing it was against his union contract to do so, to which he was also knowingly put into unsafe conditions from management. My guest today will talk about this, including his traumatic on-the-job injury he sustained on this day and everything else that transpired immediately following that injury, which includes EEOs, contacting Congress, senators, Board of Governors, and the continuous mistreatment of management and the United States Postal Service as well, even the lack of representation from the NRLCA. Buckle up for this episode of Fed Up because it's going to be a wild one. So without further ado, let's welcome in our guest today, Adric Montano. Adric, welcome to the show, brother.
Hey, Ron, how are you doing? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm doing fine, man. Thanks for asking. Now, Adric, how long have you been working for the Postal Service?
About 5 years.
5 years, and that's all as an RCA, correct?
Yeah, I would have been regular had I never had gotten injured. But yeah, I'm still classified as an RCA as of right now.
Gotcha. And I'm just curious here, but how did we meet? In other words, how did you come to find me to reach out to me and want to share your story?
Well, you know, the post office is a unique place. For as bad as everything is, I made some incredible relationships there and friends that, you know, we all went through the grind together. And there were several of those people that reached out to me, and they continue to look out for me. And they said, you gotta listen to this podcast. And they told me, you know, since I've been gone, how bad things have gotten with Rex and all of this. And they forwarded me the podcast that you did a couple of weeks ago. And man, I listened to it and I was blown away by everything that you know, you guys covered. And, you know, I could not help but listen and just sit in awe of how much the union and how much the Postal Service just doesn't care about its employees. And all of these friends of mine said, you know, you should really contact this guy and tell your story. I said, you know what? People need to hear it. People need to hear it because it coincides with everything that was on that episode and even more.
Wow. I appreciate that. I think you're referring to the episode 5 NRLCA decertification process, but man, that's,
yeah.
Wow. That's good to know that Fed Up, you know, that our platform is reaching our federal employees and our fellow brothers and sisters out there across this country. I'm glad you reached out and decided to tell your story with this all, because I think it's a story that needs to be heard by everyone. However, I'm not happy with how management and the Postal Service has treated you and the many others for that matter, especially after you got hurt on a job. So let's talk about that. Tell us exactly what happened on the day where not only did management break the contract, but also knowingly put you into an unsafe working condition without you knowing it at the time, which ultimately led you to getting severely injured.
Yeah, of course. So I was on my home route. My as an RCA, you have, you know, your first route on your matrix. And I was on that route. The regular was on vacation. And I was on that route for 4 straight days. And it was a Friday, I remember, and had tickets to go see a movie with my wife later that evening. Everything was going smooth. It was going great. I was going to be out by 3 o'clock that afternoon. And in my office, it's a rather large office. There's, you know, over 100 routes in total, big office. And there was only 2 of us that were trained on the 2-ton, the bigger truck for pickups. And there was a pickup for city and one for rural. And it just so happens that the other guy that, like myself, was trained on it, he was already running the rural side. So I got a phone call from management about 2:30 in the afternoon. And they said, we need you to come back to the office. No explanation. And I thought, you know, oh, this is weird. What's going on? They sent somebody else out to relieve me. Drove back to the office, got there, and there was management, and they said, hey, we need you to run the city side pickup, which again, I'm not supposed to do as per the contract.
And that's something that's not normally done, right? You do the rules, rules do the rural stuff, and cities do the city stuff, correct?
Correct, yeah. So this is the first time this has ever happened, and I'm like, okay, well, from what I was told in training is you can't refuse to do something, but you can file a grievance thereafter with the union. So I said, fine.
Right.
It really screwed up my plans because I was going to be out past, you know, 5 o'clock. But hey, you know what? I'm a team player. I said, fine. I got in the vehicle. They told me where to go. Now, unbeknownst to me, where they were sending me was a book depot. This place sells books, you know, internationally, and they're signed and, you know, real heavy textbooks.
Right.
And this place had been, they had been a customer for a long time, and every year there was issues with this place.
So it's fair to say, it's fair to say that this has been going on for quite some time. And when I say it's been going on, I mean that this customer or business has been calling and making these pickups for quite some time. It wasn't a surprise is what I'm saying, right?
Well, correct. And as a matter of fact, I later found out that earlier that day, the person who actually injured me, and I think he was a warehouse manager, was actually at the office with the main manager, if you will. He had a meeting with him and said, hey, I've got all of this stuff. You need to be sending multiple trucks. He had requested a semi, and that's what the facility was built for. It was built for a tractor trailer, and the dock was built for a trailer to be backed up, and they could push these pallets into the trailer.
So they've been making these pickups for quite some time now?
For years.
Wow.
For years. And every holiday season, November, December, that's when they started getting busier, and they would request a tractor trailer. And I guess they had dealt with this for years. Again, this was completely not told to me at the time. So I show up in the 2-ton, and as anybody who's ever driven them, yes, they're a big vehicle, but they're only about a foot off the ground where the bumper's at.
Right.
So I backed up to this loading dock, and the loading dock is about 4 or 5 feet high. I'm about 5'10", and, you know, I'm standing looking up, and this manager comes out. And he's upset. He's clearly upset because by the time I got out there, it was about 3:30, close to 4 o'clock.
Okay.
You know, I was on my route at 2:30, had to drive back to the office. I had to drop off the LLV, talk to management, get the 2-ton, drive all the way back out there. So it's close to 4. And he was irate. And he was upset because he was told by management that someone would be there much earlier. And we weren't out there till 4. So he was already upset.
Sure.
So while I'm standing there waiting, not knowing what's going to happen with no instruction, he starts pushing a big pallet filled with books, and he's pushing it. And he just basically chucks it off of the loading docks, and it falls on me.
Were these pallets, not to interrupt you real quick, I'm sorry, but were these pallets shrink-wrapped?
No.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was a wooden pallet, you know, a pallet. Mm-hmm. And then you had the standard USPS box, you know, the foldable boxes that are about 4 or 5 feet tall. And then it was filled with heavy books inside boxes.
So they weren't even secure. He just brought them. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, so when he dropped it, he was upset, clearly. It fell down, hit me on the shoulder, knocked me back towards the truck. I collapsed. To be honest, I'm not sure if I was knocked out or not. Right. The severity of the pain, I've never felt anything like that.
So you were backed up to the dock, and you get out. The guy's up there. He looks taken back and kind of pissed off because he was told one thing from our management and something else happened. No surprise there. But you get there. You're down on the ground, not up by the dock, and he's wheeling stuff out because he's kind of, you know, pissed off at that time, and carelessly, mistake or not, goes to bring that over to the dock there to the edge so you can get, I'm assuming. And in doing so, it fell on top of you, this couple hundred pound box that had books in, correct?
Yeah. When I got back, not to fast forward, but that box particularly, it weighed 598 pounds.
Jesus.
The reason why I know that is when I was able to get back to the post office, that was taken out, and it was weighed right away on the weigh station. And we all saw how much each one of those weighed.
Wow.
So it was almost 600 pounds, which is a quarter ton that was dropped from about 5 feet above me that landed on me.
Jesus.
If I was, you know, I'm a pretty good sized guy. If I was a smaller person, it would have killed me. So the It Falls on Me, when I remembered getting up, I don't know how long I was out for. I got up, I grabbed my shoulder immediately. And he, you know, he right away reacted. He said, "Are you okay?" You know, he got down. He's like, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "No, man. I was just trying to almost walk it off, but I was dizzy." And he's like, "Well, we need to hurry because FedEx is coming. So you need to get this stuff. We need to hurry." And I'm going, "Are you kidding me?" So lo and behold, at that point, you know, he was able to bring out more pellets, and I had to use just my right arm and try to feel this vehicle with all these books.
So you were still trying to load and do your job despite that falling on you.
Yeah. You know, it was a weird way of being. So as soon as I got in my vehicle, FedEx sure enough did show up and, you know, they were pushing. So only half the load was able to fit in that vehicle, which is again, why he was upset.
How many pallets did you have?
16.
And add a couple hundred pounds each. Jeez.
Yeah, it was overloaded. And I have pictures of it. As soon as I got in the truck, I called management and said I got hurt. Mm-hmm. I talked to my union steward, who she's amazing. She right away said, you know, this is not right. They broke the contract by sending you out there. They broke the contract by pulling you from your home route. You know, one key element is I called her when they were sending me out. Before I got there, I called her and said, "Hey, this isn't right." She goes, "No, we'll file a grievance and we'll get them to pay you more because they're not supposed to do those two things." So she knew before I pulled up to that dock. So when I got in the vehicle and I called, of course, I couldn't get through to management because they never answer. But I called her immediately and said, "I got hurt." She goes, "You get back there right now and you go to the doctor right away." And I said, "Okay." So I drove all the way back. When I got there, the dock worker, who was amazing, love her to death, she took one look at me and she goes, "You don't look right." She would not let me unload that truck. She could tell right away that something was wrong. At that point, management came out and they saw my face and they're like, "Oh shit, something ain't right." So they started trying to get the paperwork ready so I could go to the doctor immediately.
Okay.
So three or four of the other...
And this was, not to cut you off, but this was before eComp has started, right? This is only paper forms, correct?
Oh, this is right after the accident. This is probably 5:30 that evening when I got back.
Right, but what I'm saying is that it was all paper forms then, nothing on eComp. So the management, you had to rely on
Okay. It was all paper, no eComp at all at that point.
Gotcha.
So management got me the papers that they needed. You know, they were all concerned. Everybody was worried. I must have looked pretty damn rough because you could see it on their faces. Now, this is where it's typical post office. They sent out, I kid you not, three carriers and LLVs back to that dock to load the rest of that by hand.
But I thought this was going on for years. This place has been doing this and shipping out these orders. You're telling me they've been sending out small fleet of vehicles or, you know, a two-ton truck a couple times, and not once did they bring in any kind of trailer. It was only a two-ton or LOVs, whatever have you. This has been ongoing like that?
Yeah. And to make matters worse, a couple of months after I got hurt, which everybody at this point knew I got hurt.
Right.
They knew the story, and the guy continued to cause issues. In fact, they went ahead and they refused to do the pickup. They got a tractor trailer, and the guy was fighting with the tractor trailer driver. There was an issue, and one of the city carriers who went to do the pickup later on, I think this was in February, there's video of him going to pick up a pallet that is stacked 6 or 7 feet tall. And the city carrier said, I ain't touching that. That's going to fall on somebody. And he called out management. Management went out there, and they saw the whole thing collapse.
So they were aware, which once again, it's the incompetence and willful misconduct of management, right? And the total disregard management has for us as employees, even as human beings for that matter. But this proves to be an issue here, as it usually does most of the time. It's unreal. Correct. What we deal with. Unreal.
Correct. Correct. So once I got injured, I you know, called my wife. She was able to pick me up. We went to three different doctor's offices, two of which I had been to before for my drug pre-screening for the Postal Service. So I figured, Heck, if they sent me there for my drug screening, they'll see me for my shoulder and, you know, my neck. Right. And I was turned away because the paperwork wasn't adequate. They could not determine who was, even though it was federal workers' comp, who was the insured, who was it held by? Of course, none of that was on the paperwork. So they said, sorry, we can't take you.
So they were more worried about insurance and getting paid than they were about treating you.
Yeah, because
unacceptable.
The Postal Service doesn't have their ducks in a row when it comes to injuries, that they give you a whole bunch of paperwork that doesn't have the proper necessary information on it. So I was denied by two places. I finally found an urgent care that took me in. They were kind enough, even though the paperwork still was insufficient, they went ahead and saw me. They took x-rays and they said, you're not, you know, we got to send you to a specialist. So that was Friday night. I didn't get home till probably close to 10:30 that night. I was scheduled to work the next day. I went to work the next day with my information, and the manager at that time said, well, you know, we can't have you work. So come back Tuesday and we'll get all this stuff together. I said, okay. So my arm was in a sling. I went to the specialist, was an orthopedic specialist. He ordered an MRI on my neck and my shoulder. I filled out all the paperwork that was needed for HR, and that was going to be submitted to OWCP because, as you said earlier, e-comp was not a thing at that point. I did get COP, which is, you know, continuation of pay for 45 days. So it started right around the 3rd of November, because the first 3 days they don't pay you for, which I don't understand.
Only the Postal Service has that rule in place. The first 3 days are a waiting period during your COP. Yeah. Other agencies is not it. But I want to say something real quick.
Sure.
Once again, what you just said leading up to this point proves that USPS does not know, especially management, does not know what they are doing when it comes to an on-the-job work injury. They do not know. They're uneducated, or they're just playing dumb. So they're dumb or they're just playing dumb, right? The reason why you got denied, the first thing is I want to address this is you should have gotten a CA-16, right? That's an authorization for examination. That should have offered you treatment from them, stating that, yes, this is who's going to be responsible for it. The CA-16 allows you to get treated, right? And that has to be given within 4 hours of the claimant, either A, they request it, right? Or B, it's given by verbal authorization, then they have 48 hours to give it to you. So it's 48 hours with verbal authorization or 4 hours within you, the claimant, requesting it. Now, you wouldn't have known that, but had management known what the hell to do, they would have gave you the CA-16 filled out with the CA-17, right, with their part filled out, and they would have, you know, helped you with the CA-1. Did you even get a notice of receipt, a copy of the filled out traumatic incident report?
At that time, no. I basically got next to nothing.
Exactly. All this has to be done. This is why you had an uphill battle from the start. Management's dumb or they're playing dumb. You should have got that CA-16, and they should have been aware of that. This allows us, when we get injured, to go to a doctor. Again, if we get broken, it should be on them, and it is on them, to fix us and get us back to work ASAP. It helps both the employer and it helps you as the claimant. So I just had to say all that. Again, every person I talk with, it's the same old thing. Management does not know for the most part what the hell they're doing when it comes to an on-the-job work injury. But go ahead.
And I'll say this. There's one manager who went over and beyond.
Okay.
He's the only one worth mentioning. The rest of them, to be quite frank, either they don't seem to care, or they just leave it to this one individual to take everything and get it right. And,
you want to give this manager a shout out?
Yeah, I would love to. Harold Upright is just he is the man, and he's been the man since I started there, and he's been he still is, and it's really disconcerting because he's got an incredible work ethic, and he really actually cares. He was there as best he could to do everything for me, and he continues to do so. I'm still in contact with him, but he's the only one, to be honest with you, out of everyone at that office who really did a damn thing. And
right.
It's unfortunate. And he the day of the injury, he really, really tried his best to get me the forms that he could. But his bosses and upper management, with, again, it's not even worth stating their names, because they did nothing. They left it all up to him. And yeah. It's exactly what you said earlier. And I don't think they were playing dumb. I really think they don't know. I really believe that.
But you know what, though? You mentioned Harold. And listen, they are out there, right? Good management does exist. I mean, I talk about it all the time. We referred to them as the great unicorns, right? The legends, right? Well, Harold is one of those unicorns. So I just want to say thank you for doing what's right, Harold, or at least trying to. If they knew what to do, I'm sure Harold would have taken care of everything for you.
Yes, I love being able to put what's right with who needs it. And he definitely deserves everything and anything. So I contacted the doctor, went to the doctor. And of course, this doctor was not a surgeon, this specialist. And he said, well, let's try physical therapy. And at that point, they had me work 4 hours casing mail and doing physical therapy. Well, when I went to the physical therapist, they said, man, this does not feel right. They went ahead and started, I think it was 4 weeks of physical therapy. And that lasted through December 15th or the 16th, which right when my COP ended. The physical therapist basically said, there's a lot wrong with your neck and your shoulder. So at that time, OWCP had given me a nurse. They had assigned me a nurse to help out.
A field nurse,
and
right.
She reached out to me right after Christmas, and she says, we need to get you to a surgeon for your shoulder, since that was the first immediate impact. I said, okay. And she looked at my MRIs, and she goes, there's some major damage. So at this point, I went and saw Dr. West for my shoulder in January. And he said, look, we this is so severe, we cannot scope your shoulder, which is going through, with a small scope and repairing, which is what they typically do. It's non-invasive for like a rotator cuff or what have you. He said, we actually have to cut you open. And they ended up cutting my left shoulder, 5 or 6 inch, cut. In essence, they had to repair a lot of stuff, and they had to Dremel, if you will, some of the bone fragments because of the impact and how heavy it was.
Wow.
So I had yet to get paid other than the COP. So there was no payment at all from OWCP. I had never had surgery before in my life. So I had never, been under anesthesia or anything. So started dealing with a lot of that. Came home to recover. They had me on a giant ice machine. And what I learned is the shoulder can be a very difficult surgery, that and knees. So I recovered, and as I waited, I was dealing with not having any income during the holidays and during, the first of the year. I was trying to submit CA-7s or what have you. As it turns out, the local HR just wasn't filling out the paperwork right, which
this was away. HR with the Postal Service, you're talking?
With the Postal Service. So they assign you to a caseworker for the Postal Service. And then that person gathers all your documentation that was given.
Yeah, basically called human resource management specialists. They handle your on the job work injury stuff. So yeah.
Yeah. So the person I got assigned to was awful, the worst. And ironically, this person had a really bad reputation from anybody that I dealt with. And they said, "Well, who's your case worker?"
You're in Tennessee, right?
Yes.
So was it Michelle Edmondson?
That's exactly the person.
Yeah. Yep. See, yep. Hateful and doesn't want to help anybody from what I gather.
Oh, so the nurse right away told me, she goes, she is the worst.
See?
So the nurse I was assigned had dealt with her before and said, she will not help. She's going to make things harder.
Wow.
The doctor's office knew about this lady. They said, she is the worst. So she was not submitting the proper paperwork to OWCP. So I was not getting any type of compensation. When I did finally get some, this would have been March, towards the end of March, I saw that the compensation was for 34 hours a week worked at 60%.
Now, for the listeners out there, for rural carriers, if they're not rural carriers who are in Postal Service, for those who aren't even in the Postal Service, rural carriers, you guys get paid not hourly, but by how long it takes to run your route. So in essence, you're pretty much salary, correct?
For regulars, yes. For RCAs, we were hourly.
So you are hourly as an RCA. Gotcha.
Yeah, you were hourly as an RCA. The funny part is, and this what I later found out is, as an RCA, you're guaranteed one day a week. So if you're out in the far, far country and it's a small area and there's, let's say, five routes and they hire you, well, you can work 1 or 2 days a week because those people could be on vacation or they work 5 day week. So you fill in the one day. That's typically what an RCA can be as per the contract. But when you have a huge office that has over 100 routes and there's 100 people and there's only 30 RCAs, well, you know, it's clearly obvious that you're going to be working 7, 8, 9 straight days, and you're going to be working 50, 60 hours a week, which is what we averaged. But being that, you know, they don't want to pay for it, I was told that it was put in a sliding pool and they averaged it to where I would get paid 34 hours. And I said, that's impossible. We all work 50 to 60. Again, I had management contact him and I said, no, it should be 40. He should get at least minimum 40. So they will not pay overtime. They right. will not pay overtime. If I worked 100 hours a week, they'd only pay for 40. So I should at least be entitled to 40. Michelle made it a point to make it at 34. So I had to, at that point, go over her head, talk to her boss. And what we were able to resolve, which is still asinine, is I was paid 38 hours.
Still not the 40.
And to this day, it's still at 38. You're allowed 60% of that time. Unless you have dependents, and then it goes up to 75%. So,
well, it's 66 and two-thirds pay without the dependent. You're right, though. If it is with the dependent, then it's 75%. Correct. But it's based off of the pay at the time that you got injured. Whatever your pay was, that's what that percentage goes off of in regards
correct.
To your pay.
So you're losing almost half, or, you know, a third, which is difficult. And it took January, February, March before I start getting any income at all. So what ends up happening next is the nurse had said, you have spinal injuries. We need to get you contacted now by the next doctor. So I said, okay, great. So we were going to go ahead and schedule that. But as you can imagine, I'm still recovering from my shoulder. So they don't want me to be seen by the spinal surgeon, you know, until I'm close to recovery. So we had explained all this, submitted all this. Well, I get a phone call, and I kid you not, in April, before I was released by my doctor, I'm at home, I'm on my ice machine, and I get a phone call, and I answer, and I say, hello, and I get, is this Adrian Montano? I said, this is, can I help you? Yeah, this is so-and-so with the Postal Service. I'm the manager here in Franklin, and you need to come back to work. I spoke to your nurse today, and you're free to come back. I said, excuse me? They said, you need to come back. I said, who is this? And he gave me a name that I was not familiar with. Again, you know, there was Harold, who was my immediate boss, and there was some others. And I was like, so I thought I was being punked. I thought it was a prank by some of my friends. And he started getting irate. And he, at that point, told me, I talked to your nurse, and she said you're supposed to come back, and I talked to your doctor, and if you don't come back tomorrow, you're getting fired.
Jeez, so they threatened you with termination.
They threatened me with termination at that point. So I said...
And your doctor, what, didn't he release you at that point or no?
No, not at all. So wow. I got off the phone. I called my nurse immediately and said, did you talk to this person? She goes, no, you're not released to go back. You're still under Dr. West's instructions.
So you called to verify that. And they,
yeah.
Wow.
And then I called, on top of that, I called my managers and they said, yeah, we have a new manager here and that is his name. I said, are you kidding me? He just called and threatened my job. I said, did he not contact you guys? And they're like, no. I said, wow. So then I called my union representative, told her as well, and she was blown away. And then lastly, I called my OWCP caseworker, and I said, I just got this call. Did they contact you? And
that, he goes, you're talking to your claims examiner, right?
Yeah, claims examiner.
Gotcha.
And he said, no. In fact, you're still within your time with your current doctor, but we have you scheduled with the spinal surgeon, so you're not going back anytime soon. And I said, well, somebody did this. And sure enough, it turned out it was Michelle Edmondson.
Wow. See,
she had sent an email to this manager telling him to get me back to work. So at that point, OWCP contacted her and said, No, he is not authorized. I am putting him on the rolls. So at that point, I no longer had to fill out CA-7s. I was being paid by workers' comp permanently until I was released.
Correct.
So she has been, you know, relentlessly trying to get people to go back so they don't have to get paid by COP or workers' comp.
They're notorious for doing that, by the way. Not just Michelle Edmondson. They all are, just about. Across the board, across this country.
Just incredible that they just didn't care to my health concerns. I mean, I'm still under doctor's orders. So I was released by Dr. West, you know, within 2 weeks. I went and saw a spinal surgeon, and sure enough, I had severe spinal issues in my neck. The impact from it hitting and me jolting caused some major issues with four of my vertebrae. He suggested surgery, and at that point, there was a possibility, instead of doing a full fusion with four vertebrae, he could have, at that point, used two artificial discs, which would have kept my movement better. So at that point, he said, here's what I plan on doing. We'll do two artificial discs and fuse one, and that way you'll have some kind of movement. You won't be completely fused. That's great. We submitted that. Of course, the medical examiner for workers' comp agreed that there was issues. However, they wanted to look at other avenues like injections or what have you instead of surgery. So workers' comp at that point, OWCP, needed to submit a second opinion on their doctor to see if, you know, they coincided. I had to wait until January of 2021. So this would have been May or June of 2020. I was told to wait by workers' comp, getting paid that less amount until January of 2021 before I was able to be seen by their doctor of their choosing.
So about 7 months.
7 months of waiting.
Before we move on here, I just want to address a few things, what you just said, before we carry on with the timeline here. Anybody out there who's experiencing work comp issues when you get injured on a job and your management is trying to screw you like they usually do, knowingly, willfully or not, right? Forms got to be timely submitted. Now, again, this was before e-comp. This was dealing with paper forms. So there had to be some kind of violations, right? As far as not getting paperwork in and on a timely fashion in your particular case. First off, 20 CFR 10.110. It tells you what exactly needs to happen when an employee files for a notice of a traumatic injury or occupational disease. That just means a CA1 or a CA2. You're entitled to get copies of all pages of that CA1 or CA2 that is filed. That did not happen in your case, right?
Oh, in fact, this is gonna be fun for everybody.
I just want to yes or no real quick, because I want to carry on. I want to get into a couple more things here. But they give you copies of that?
No, I didn't get that.
That's the first thing.
Much later.
The next thing is the CA16. You didn't even know what that was, so I'm assuming they didn't even give you one because you had problems early on getting the treatment. They were denying you and turning you away from getting treated, which you ended up at urgent care, which isn't the best place, but at least they helped you. But no CA-16 either, correct?
No.
Did they give you a CA-17 to take to your treating physician when you were finally being seen for someone from your injury?
The forms that I got were CA-1 and a CA-7.
No CA-17. So when you went back to work and they had you filing different, casing different stuff at that time, or whatever they have you doing on a modified assignment, did you get a 2499?
Not at that point, no.
So they just had you doing modified a job, if you will, without the 2499.
Yeah, and no one knew. You know, management didn't, they truly didn't have a clue. The union, in essence, my union rep, which she's amazing. She's no longer the union rep because of how disgusting the union was.
Right.
She ended up leaving.
Which she needs to be applauded, by the way, because at least she was there for you, and you're NRLCA, so that's huge, because I hear quite the opposite of what just happened with you. She was there for you.
I would love to say her name. Unfortunately, I think she's now in a different position, and I don't want, you know, that to be a problem.
Yeah, no worries. We'll give her a shout out anyway. Whoever she knows who she is, if she ever listens to this.
Yeah, and everybody knows who she was. She went over and beyond, just like Harold did, and she went to fight for me with the union. And the union basically told her, as they told me, as soon as somebody gets injured, and I cannot believe this, as soon as it becomes an OWCP issue, we have nothing to do with it.
you see, that's exactly what I'm talking about. That right there. We pay union dues, whatever union we are in, but receive this kind of representation from national or local. In this case, it was national because your local store actually did her job, was actually there for you, did the best she could. But should we have this kind of representation at all? Whatever union you're a part of, I leave you with this to ponder. Is that's the kind of unions, the kind of union leadership you want representing you? Can we truly count on our union and its leaders to fight for us when it matters most? Can we truly rely on national union leaders? Can we? I'll leave you to answer those questions for yourself, but I think most of my audience knows where I stand on union issues by now. But let me just say this before we move on. A union or any organization or any agency for that matter is only as good as the leaders it has at the top. And y'all leaders are definitely failing your members on many different levels. You know, national unions and its respective leaders, gotta do better, man. Y'all should be there for your members. Stop ignoring them. And in some cases, selling them out for your own personal gain, making deals with management, whatever the case is. Agencies and its management, stop creating and promoting hostile and toxic work environments. Treat your employees with dignity and respect more and see how quick your work morale and your retention rate increases. All y'all need to do the right thing, especially when no one's around. It's called integrity. So please stop with the bullshit and start implementing that characteristic. It's doing the right thing. It's called integrity. So start doing this shit. I'm sorry for that little tangent, but it pisses me off when I hear you say and others that their union at National did nothing for them. Now, did you even talk to Devin Cassidy, who's your National Union's OWCP quote unquote expert?
Yeah, I actually, so throughout all of this, my union representative, the person at my office, she gave me the number of her boss, if you will. And I can't remember his name for the life of me, but worthless.
Not surprising.
He was just, I mean, just the most condescending, just worthless person. I had to go over his head. I ended up speaking to another lady and she was understandable, but she said, we can't do anything. We can't, you know, there's nothing we can do.
Was this a district representative?
She would have been. Yeah. And then they gave me, Devin's number and I called him, and if anybody's ever talked to him, they know what that's about. Again, condescending. I was told, I was before warned by the union representatives, by the district representatives, look, he's different. When you call him, don't give him too much because he'll get upset and he won't want to work with you. I kid you not.
Unreal.
They told me that when they gave me his phone number. I was like, you're telling me this, you know, this is the guy supposed to be helping me. So lo and behold, I called him. I told him what's going on. And again, they find excuses not to help you.
That's their job. Unbelievable.
Yeah. So I ended up contacting the headquarters. I found a phone number and they gave me a lady named Sharon. I don't remember Sharon's last name, but she was high up in, I think, the whole eastern part of the country. And I found her phone number. I called her and I explained to her my issues. She was the first person who actually seemed to kind of appreciate where I was coming from. But again, it was one of these things where, you know, well, have you contacted Devin? I said, yes. I went nowhere. Did you contact this other person? Yes. And went nowhere. Lo and behold, she kicked me back to this other district guy. And he's the one for the district here for Middle Tennessee. And I wish I could remember his name. I really do. I can't remember his name. Worthless. He had the audacity to tell me that they got us a 2% raise and that's more than we've gotten and we should be grateful for that. And I said, well, whip-de-doo, you know, 2% raise, that's not going to pay my bills. That's not going to help me get back to work. You know, I'm facing all of this stuff and the union wants to do zero mm-hmm. to help me. The union is utterly worthless. As I said before, my union rep, an amazing, amazing person. I love her to death. It got so bad with my case and other cases that she was dealing with, grievances that she was having to deal with. She said, you know what? The union is worthless. They will not let me help any of these people with real problems, whether it was, you know, being sent out in vehicles that are continue to get damaged. I mean, just everyday normal stuff. She said, I'm done. And she sent a letter of resignation and told them, I've had it with the union because you guys aren't worth a damn. That's how bad the union was.
That speaks volumes right there.
I would love for her to tell her story with you guys again. I wish I could say her name because she deserves that just like Harold does, but she's in a different position now, and I would hate for her to have any issues with that.
Was Sharon a state president by any chance?
She might have been. She was a very high up position, because I remember when I called her, she was shocked that I got her number. But I'm tenacious in that
exactly.
way. I will do diligence like I'm still doing now. I'm still fighting it years later. I spoke with her twice, and both times she took the call with grace. You could tell she was frustrated. You could tell she knew they were doing wrong, and she kicked it down to the person that should be handling it, and this guy did nothing. And anybody that I know that have dealt with him can't stand it. The only thing that I saw the union do, and this is the truth, is if there were people that were at work that got caught doing things they shouldn't, throwing mail or smoking marijuana or something, those people got their jobs back. And that's what the union excelled at, is getting people who were fired their jobs back.
Right.
When it came to real world things, where injuries or, you know, pay issues or discrimination or things, the union walked away. But when it came to, oh, we're going to get him his job back, oh, they fought tooth and nail. And I told that to this one individual, this district guy, and again, just worthless. There's no reason to go into any more of the union, because, to be honest with you, they showed me nothing to this day.
Yeah. Well, you're not the first, and you most certainly won't be the last to say that about the NRLCA. So, but let's move on. But before I do, I just wanted to ask you another quick question. In a short answer, when you first got injured, and then fast forward a little bit, do you feel that management or the post office intentionally tried to screw you, intentionally tried to delay, challenge, change the story or your claim, anything in that nature that was against it?
Yes.
Do you feel like that was the case?
Yes.
And why do you say that?
Well, two reasons. One, again, going back to the caseworker, Michelle Edmondson, I mean, it was clear cut and dry by her reputation alone. And this is attorneys, nurses, doctors, their reputation alone from other people. I didn't even know who she was.
There's an established pattern with her. Absolutely.
Yeah, it was an established pattern, correct. So, I mean, it was shocking to just, oh, you got her. When I heard that right away, and then to find out that, little enough, she was taking a long time to file paperwork. She was having managers call me and threaten my job. She was trying to get me to go back. The other thing that was really disgusting, because I got injured at a third-party establishment. I got paperwork from the Postal Service, and I kid you not, that basically stated, you are going to go after them for compensation as to your right. However, we are entitled to 30% of whatever compensation shall you get.
Now, I want to expand on that here, if I can, just a bit, both for my audience and for you as well, Edric, in regards to third-party injuries. When a federal employee is injured in the course of duty, meaning on the clock, at work, performing your duties, right, and that injury was caused by another person or an organization, that person or organization is referred to as the third party. Now, to your point, under 5 USC 8131, it states that an injured federal employee may be required to pursue a recovery for damages against a third party. Now, two of the most common third party injuries or situations we will find ourselves in as carriers, whether it be a rural carrier or a city carrier, are car accidents and dog bites. Those are the top two common things, right? Well, when a car accident is caused by a third party, as a federal employee, you have a third party claim to pursue against that person. When a dog bites you and you know who the owner of that dog is, you can pursue recovery of damages against the dog owner. And as in your case, Adric, you may be required to pursue a third-party claim against the person or business involved here as well. See how that works? But even if you don't know if a third-party injury is in play with your particular injury and situation, have no fear, because you will be notified. See, once you file a claim with the Department of Labor or WCP and it's accepted, eventually you will get a letter from the Office of the Solicitor out of Washington, D.C., letting you know of the third-party aspects of your claim. With this letter, there will be a questionnaire for you and or your lawyer, if you have one, to fill out, which you'll have to send back to them. Now, I suggest doing this right away. Do not hesitate, as you may have your benefits suspended, and that's something you do not want to have happen to you. But I'll get more into that momentarily. First, I want to tell you four things you need to be aware of regarding third-party injuries. Now, you can get these straight from OWCP. You can Google it as well. But I'm going to read you this straight from a book called Breaking OWCP, Overcoming Obstacles That Lead to Personal Life Destruction, written by my good friend Chris Helms, who also wrote and published three other books in addition to this one, all of which you can find on BreakingOWCP.com, which all have great information that can bring added value to us federal employees and unions. I highly recommend you look into getting a copy of each of these. Now, for those of you who don't know, I actually had Chris on for a two-part interview, which you can find here on Fed Up Podcast on Podbean, episodes 8 and 9. Check them out. But I'll give you the quick rundown of this man before we move on, a quick resume, if you will. Chris Helms is the president and co-founder of Federal Injury Centers, which provides a network of doctors for us to use when we get injured on the job. Chris and his team provides training to these doctors, which includes the language needed for narrative reports when dealing with the Department of Labor, how to bill for treatment given, and how to correctly fill out your forms needed regarding your injury, in addition to compliance training and manuals, which should be the industry standard as far as I'm concerned. But the biggest takeaway here is that it costs nothing out of pocket for us federal employees to go to one of these federal injury center locations. Now, I'm sure a lot of you know, or are finding out anyway, that it can get costly pretty quick when you're injured on a job. To find a location near you, simply go to federalinjurycenters.com. Again, no out-of-pocket expense whatsoever for injured federal workers. Chris also has a platform on Facebook called Wednesday Night OWCP Chats with Chris and Jeannie, which can be watched live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. on Facebook Live. And if you can't make that, you can watch the playback at your convenience. Also coming soon, Chris has a podcast dropping very soon, which is called the Breaking OWCP Podcast with Chris and Jeannie. Now listen, I know that just seemed like a big commercial spot there, right? But believe me when I say, if I didn't think that was worth sharing or didn't know how much information and education and value that this man brings to us federal employees, I would have never said any of that. Trust me. And yes, I 100% support and recommend Chris Helms and all he does for us federal employees. But back to the third-party injuries here. The four things I wanted you to be aware of. One, the claimant is required to pursue damages. Two, injured workers are required to report any settlements obtained from the third party. Three, benefits can be suspended if the claimant does not pursue damages or fails to report them. And four, a portion of any settlement obtained must be refunded to OWCP. So basically, you have to pursue damages, file a lawsuit in essence, unless you are released from this obligation from the solicitor or from OWCP. If you don't do this or do not obtain a written release from this obligation, your benefits can be suspended. But here's the good news. If you do get a settlement, a portion of the settlement does go to OWCP, but that means a portion also goes to you. In fact, OWCP specifically says that the claimant, which is you, the injured worker, is entitled to a minimum of 20% of the tort recovery after expenses of suit are deducted. Yes, you got to pay your lawyer if you get one to deal with this. But let me say this again. You get a minimum of 20% or what's left, which could be more than 20% depending on your damages received, right? Now, some of you may be saying, do I need to hire a lawyer? The short answer to that is no. But in reality, it's much easier to hire a lawyer to deal with this than to deal with it ourselves. Some of you out there may be able to do this yourself, but that's your decision to make. I, on the other hand, after dealing with so much already, I wanted to hire a lawyer to deal with my Department of Labor OWCP issues and my OPM federal disability retirement and my schedule ward. So I had him deal with this third party issue as well, since I already obtained his services. But I will say this. Make sure you do your due diligence and vet whoever you want to hire. Make sure you hire a federal work comp attorney, not a PI, not a local PI attorney in your state. Reason being that while your PI attorney in your state will know a lot within the state where the injury took place, they will know very little to nothing about federal work comp, which as a federal work comp lawyer will know everything about federal work comp, and they can easily see each state's law that it states in regards to third-party injury claims. See, while federal work comp is the same across the board throughout the country, the laws pertaining to third-party injuries can differ from state to state. So do your due diligence if you're going to hire an attorney. Having said that, let's review the main takeaways here. When you're injured by a third party, you're required to sue them and pursue damages, and you're required to report any settlements obtained from the third party to OWCP. Benefits may be suspended if the claimant does not pursue damages or fails to report them, and if a settlement is obtained, the claimant will split the settlement with OWCP, essentially in an 80-20 split after legal expenses are paid. But keep in mind, you do not have to pursue damages if you are released from this obligation in writing from the solicitor or OWCP. What does this mean? Well, remember what I said earlier, that you will be notified from the Office of Solicitor from DC regarding the third party aspects of your claim, how it comes with a questionnaire you got to fill out. When you fill that out, question 3 asks, it says, if you have not filed a claim for damages, state your reason for not doing so. So you or your lawyer will fill that out according to the state laws where you got injured in. So for me, I live in PA. So with the laws here pertaining to third-party injuries, it's pretty much didn't make sense to file a claim, but it was going to be hard to prove, making it very difficult to win, right? Which translates to it's not worth the time or resources to pursue. Now, I had a lawyer fill this out, but again, they wrote the reason as to why we weren't pursuing damages and filled out the rest of the questionnaire and sent this back in ASAP. As I said before, do not delay in getting this back to the solicitor in DC, as they can suspend your benefits. But once they get this and they see you are not pursuing damages and why you are not pursuing them and that you have a lawyer, they will write back to you and give you this written release from the obligation of pursuing third-party damages. And then the solicitor puts that in his records and pretty much closes out your responsibilities from filing a third-party claim. Now, if you don't get that, though, that written release of obligation there, then that's a conversation to have with your lawyer as to why that is and what they want and why they want you to pursue it. Chances are, though, the solicitor will get it right the first time, as this is what they do. And it's pretty much the only thing that you'll see that gets done in a timely manner regarding your on-the-job work injury. Now, I know that was a lot to digest there, but I just wanted to share that with my audience, with you as well, Adrian, regarding third-party injuries.
Yeah, of course. It's just, again, it's one of those things where, you know, you're severely injured. You are, you know, for my case, I am now disabled. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the only way of compensation, they're still taking what they want out of it. So they're not losing anything, which is no, you know, no worry off them. So if they pay you, you know, for 2 years, you know, what you're supposed to be getting paid, you have to pay it back.
Well, you only got to pay it back if you get a settlement through the third party injury. Keep that in mind.
Yeah, of course. It's just, again, you're not really getting any benefit. And like you said, it's standard, which is understandable. Yeah. But this isn't anything, you know, it hits you across the face. So it's just
one thing
after another.
And you're already going through it and you're constantly going through it. Correct. Yeah, it sucks, man.
Yeah. So you're, whether you want to or not, if like in my state in Tennessee, they will go after it, which they are, they'll use your name and they're going to get paid back.
Wow.
So they're not out anything. The Postal Service at this point, they get all the money that they paid for anything, they get back, and the person who's injured gets little or nothing. So it's very disconcerting to sit back as an employee and say, so if I get injured, and this goes for, you know, I hope your listeners can appreciate this. If you don't take care of you and make sure you're okay, if you get injured, you're looking, you know, at basically nothing. You're going to go through hell. And they're going to end up getting what they get out of it, but they just, in essence, kind of toss you to the side.
Big fish, small fish philosophy. That's it.
Yeah, exactly.
To backtrack just a little bit, when you said that you felt that they being management or the agency itself, were trying to make the process difficult, sitting on forms, not doing the right thing with the forms as far as your injury goes, anything related to your injury, and you felt that they were doing it. I want to ask you, did they try to prevent you or forego you from filing an injury claim from the jump?
No, Harold was really good at, you know, trying.
Oh, that's right. It was Harold. My mistake. Yep. Okay. Yeah. That's really, really good. Generally speaking, management does do that. For example, they may say something like, well, if you file this claim, we're going to probably fire you. Or you may want to think twice about filing this injury claim. They'll always do stuff like that. That's why I was asking, because I was going to, you know, again, inform people about, you know, 18 U.S.C. 1922, whoever induces, compels, or directs an injured employee to forego filing an injury claim shall be fined, imprisoned, and both, right? It's basically a crime to prevent you from filing a work injury claim. And that's what I was getting at.
I can say this because of my injury, because of all the knowledge that I've gathered. I've had many, many people contact me from, you know, throughout the state,
right,
that have gotten injured, and they've said, "Hey, can you help me? I got injured." And I've actually had other people, other offices say exactly what you've told me. And I've had other people call and say, "Hey, they're trying to send me to their doctor today, and their doctor's telling me that I'm fine just to get injected and go back to work." And I'm going, "What? No,
right."
I've had, in fact, I have a really good buddy of mine. Just last week, he and I went into training academy together, and we've been friends now for, you know, 5 years, and his knee popped. I mean, it popped severely, and it took management 4 days to submit his paperwork. He had to threaten to go to the IMPU to get it done. You know, he called me up and he goes, "Dude, you know, can you help me?" And I said, "Of course I can." You know, there's something called the Rule Injury Handbook, and no one knows about it. But it is there. You can Google it. I hope you can submit it to some of your people. This is an awesome tool that tells you every form, like the CA-17, the CA-7. It breaks down everything. It tells you step by step of what to do if you get injured. And it's just mind-blowing that no one in management was even aware of this.
It's a beautiful tool.
The union had no clue about this. No one knew
the
what
the union.
This was.
It's the union's handbook. What?
Yeah,
Jesus Christ.
It's the union's handbook. So, and this handbook, this is how I explained it to people. Everybody goes to the contract. Everybody right away wants to recite the contract. And the contract is typically first and foremost on everything. But let's call that book A, if you will. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you have book A and someone's trying to do something different, hey, let's go to the contract and they can look it up. That's your set of instructions. The Rule Injury Handbook is book B, because when you get injured, whether you're regular or whether you're non-career, you're still an employee. And when you get injured severely, things change, because you are now under a different set of rules being injured. There's certain things you can and can't do. There's restrictions. There's all these other happenings, if you will, that need to be addressed. So this handbook has addressed those specifically. The problem is almost all of management, whether it's local management, and the further you go up, the less they seem to know. They don't want to look at book B. They don't know that book B exists. So they continue to recite book A, book A, book A, which is contract. But when you get injured, you are no longer susceptible to the rules of book A. You are now categorized under book B, and you're supposed to be adjusted to those rules and regulations.
Right.
Now, in reading this rule injury handbook, I found it through research. I printed it out. I gave it to everybody I could. And I started doing the reading on it. And I said, "Well, wait a minute. What they're doing to me is against their own rules." Now, if book A and book B exist, those are part of the Bible, if you will, which is the ELM. So you can kind of look at book A as the Old Testament and book B as the,
Let me just stop you real quick. For those out there who don't know what ELM stands for, that's basically the Employee Labor Relations Manual.
Yeah, no problem. So the ELM, it basically has all the rules, regulations. This is the main thing. So everything that is in this injury handbook is in the ELM. Everything that's in the contract.
Which, by the way, in the ELM is it's in the 540 section for my listeners out there.
Yes. So going back to my injury, all this other stuff will come into play here shortly. But I ended up going to see this doctor that they gave me, they assigned me to in January. And this doctor did not touch me. This doctor did not examine me. He had a bunch of notes, and he was trying to run his notes by me for me to clarify his notes to make them a little bit more understanding. I left his office, and I kid you not, the next day I get a call from Michelle Edmondson saying that I need to be back at work, that doctor said I was cleared. I said, "What are you talking about? We've gone through this before. We went through this in April of last year." So about a month goes by, and sure enough, this doctor, he was supposed to be assigned to just say whether I needed surgery or not.
Second opinion doctor you're talking.
Second opinion for surgery only. He decided to state that I was completely fine, that nothing was wrong with me whatsoever. So at that point, workers' comp said, "Well, we were looking at his remarks, and we're looking at terminating your roles and your case." I went to my surgeon, and at this point, because they had me wait for 7 months, I was no longer available to have two of the disc replacement. Now I needed to have full-on fusion from all four discs.
Well, they waited too long for what it sounds like. But listen, we're going on an hour here, so we're going to end this episode here and call this part one of our interview. And we'll pick back up with part two of Adric's story next week, starting with a recap and quick timeline so we can continue with his story. Until then, stay safe out there, my friends. That about does it here for us at Fed Up. Please don't forget to like, follow, and share this podcast. And if you are fed up like everyone else is and want to share your story and experiences, your issues and frustrations, and want your voice to be heard, I invite you to be a guest on this show. There's strength in numbers, and together, by sharing our stories, we can and will make the change that is needed. Just send me an email at one.fedup.podcast@gmail.com. Again, that's the number 1.fedup.podcast@gmail.com, and I'll get back to you as soon as possible. Again, thanks for tuning in. Until next time, stay safe out there, my friends.
Shit.